If you want to support this podcast and get a full ad-free episode, sign up to Headstuff Plus.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It's the UXDesignInstitute.com/Dubland, right? And just to give an example of what this does, right?
This is good for me, yeah.
Right.
So, explain it to me like I'm a toddler.
So ketchup, right? Tomato sauce, ketchup, right?
What has UX design got to do with ketchup?
I'm literally going to say it. So there was all glass ketchup bottles that you used to have to, you know, you shook them or you banged them or you slapped
them.
Or you stuck a spoon right into them and you made that, the hand, all of that. Remember all the ads?
Remember it well.
And we used to sort of like smack the bottles to the music and all that sort of crap.
Yeah.
And then you'd either get like a tiny drop would come out or that little watery, tomatoey, watery drop. Or else you'd get like a glug.
Yeah.
All of it would come out all over your chips. And you know how much easier than it is. If you pick up a plastic bottle, how much easier to control the ketchup it is. Right. Here's what you don't know. It was known as UX research at the time, but that is essentially UX research. That's what it is. In the 80s, researchers from a well-known ketchup company.
Right.
Pretty sure we could guess who it is, but we're trying to leave labels out at this point.
So we shouldn't say Heinz.
You shouldn't say that.
Right.
And they observed families, they were using the ketchup bottle, they noticed two things, right? First, they realised that the biggest users of ketchup, which is kids.
Yeah, dip.
No surprise there. The little dippers, little
we
chip
call
dippers.
We call them dip dippers in our house.
There you go.
Where's
and
my
more
dip
importantly,
dip?
Because the bottles were so hard to use because they were glass bottles and all, it was the parents that were using them. So the parents were using them, and then because if kids used them, they'd either smash them or they'd get stuff
all
over the place.
Yeah.
So to solve that problem, they came up with the squeezy bottle.
Right.
So the squeezy bottle meant that parents could let their kids use the ketchup without the table looking like something from a murder movie, like a slasher movie.
Okay.
And the kids could get all the ketchup they wanted without spilling it all over the place and making a mess and get it all over them. Because they were now allowed to use the bottle. UX design, right? That's essentially UX design.
Is that what that thinking is called?
That's what that thinking is called. Today's UX designers and researchers carry out that kind of research every day, now I'm reading, when they're building or improving apps, websites, software. They identify and fix problems to make the experience simpler for users, just like swapping an awkward glass of ketchup bottle for an easy, squeezy, lemon steezy one or whatever that saying is. So that's what it is. So if that sounds interesting to you and you want to do that when it comes to your phone,
to learn about good design,
websites, or design of any kind, then UX Design Institute is where you want to go. They're the sponsors of this podcast. UX Design Institute deliver university credit rated online courses in UX design. So that's what you do. UXDesignInstitute.com/Dubland. Thank
More
you.
Details.
Get
Thank
on
you.
It. Go learn. Watch videos. If you're listening to the Dubland podcast here on the Headstuff Network and you like it, which we hope you do, remember there is lots of other podcasts on this network, like this one.
When it comes to understanding political issues, I am a self-confessed toddler. That's why I've enlisted the help of Steve, my politically savvy drinking buddy, to help me better understand politics.
Every couple of weeks, we get together and record on topics like what is the politics of language, what is Watergate, how the internet is killing democracy.
We take these big issues and we break them down into silly little comedic bite-sized bits. If you like the sound of that, then search for What Am Politics in your podcast app of choice or find us here on the Headstuff Podcast Network.
And gentlemen, you're in for a treat because you're listening to the Dubland Podcast with Suzanne and PJ.
Shove your Dubland Podcast up your ear holes.
It's Dubland. This week it's a bit of a difference. We have a Dubland Meets, but before we talk to Owen McGee and absolutely grill him through bad financial decisions that we've made.
Yay! What a joy. Let's focus on the negative that we've done all through our lives.
I've never come across a man so popular on Instagram in my life. I put up a thing the other day and I was like, does anybody want to ask Owen McGee any questions? And they literally flooded in. And if it wasn't a really quite a serious financial question, it was like, can we start a crowdfund to get PJ a mortgage? Which is basically why Owen is here.
Well, that's never going to happen.
We're just going to drain
him. There's a list in every bank in Ireland and there's like the 10 biggest arseholes in the country, and I'm number one on that list. And
that's
I know Owen's going to say banks don't do that. They do.
Sorry, I will not defend the banks. They do that just for you, only for you.
So have you had a good week? One thing I need to tell you before we start that I learned this week is that remember we were talking about Cadbury's last week. I don't know if you know this, Owen, but Cadbury's Dairy Milk, like their bars. Remember we were talking about them last week. You can't get Mint Crisp in the UK. You can't get Golden Crisp. And our Cadbury's tastes different to English Cadbury's. So again...
Doesn't, even now after they did... Because remember there was that weird chocolate takeover, changeover like a year ago.
So our chocolate is better, the Irish chocolate, that yeah, obviously.
The scars it is.
Even up in the UK, or well, Northern Ireland, with I don't even know what currency, don't even know what currency they take up their own. that's a true story. But
yellow tatoes is the currency up there.
Yeah, yellow tatoes. So we now beat them on yellow tatoes and Cadbury's. Like, because loads of people instantly last week going, A, we don't get those chocolate bars. They don't get Mint Crisp. They don't get Golden Crisp. And also, our chocolate tastes better. Because then my cousin Kieran was like, no, it's I buy Cadbury at home, which he calls Ireland, and bring it home because it's creamier, tastier.
But you know what? I bet you never knew there was a segue between chocolate and money and finance, right?
Yeah.
Do you know what shrinkflation is?
No, talk into your microphone, though.
Shrinkflation. I will. I'll try and move. I'll try and be good, okay? Yeah. Shrinkflation is where... You know the way, like, when you were small and you were young, bars were much bigger.
Yes.
Of course they were. Was it on our teeny tiny hands?
No, it wasn't actually. They were bigger, there's a thing called shrinkflation where the size of the chocolate bars are getting smaller and the prices are going up so that they make more money.
So they're robbing us.
Yeah.
Because it's one of those things that was in cocoa is getting more expensive as well.
Yeah.
So they just kind of do that thing like they did when we changed to euro where we rounded everything up a tenner.
Yes. And you know what the other problem is there was a big problem about 2 years ago where there was a big problem with cocoa because the summer was bad or the winter was good or something happened over in those countries below America, you know, South America, I think it's called. And they
like Northern Ireland. Hello.
And what they did was is that when they all the farmers found that they were really having difficulties, they'd all signed contracts with the government and the big chocolate makers of the world, and then they sold all their stuff on the black market because they were getting more money. They said, oh no, the summer was bad, we had a bad crop, we've no cocoa for you, and sold it all on the black market, and the price of chocolate went through the roof.
That's amazing. So there was like this, it was an underworld of chocolate for a while.
Absolutely,
Wonka
yeah.
underworld.
That's what it was. Like Mexican lads selling Toblerones in back alleys. Have you got any of the Swiss stuff? No, can't get my hands on the Swiss.
Not at all.
But this year's Belgian, it's pretty handy, honestly. You'll like it. Give it a test and see. I've got plenty more where that came from.
And then they were obviously giving the British the crap stuff and we were getting better quality.
Is it not
got
to do with our cows though? Isn't that like the milk that goes into them?
I mean, to be honest with you, Owen, I never dug that deep. I just took it as a win. Just went, we've been through a lot together. The crisp situation, they win on crisps other than a tato.
See, no one agrees with it. No one thinks this except for you and the Orange Order. Yes. Oh, you're the only two fucking
Walkers.
People.
Walkers.
Your family and the Orange Order. The only two organisations who think the Nordies are better crisps. Everybody else knows
I fear
Catholic tato are the superior tato.
Now, when it comes to tato, you know how I feel.
Transubstantiation tato is the way to go.
When it comes to tato, that's how I feel. I feel like that about tato, but I like a Watsit and...
Yeah, you see,
like
you're very British in your taste, though. But tea and everything.
Only drink Yorkshire. But listen, I've said that to you. If we go back probably 200 years, 150 years even, I would have been the fucker on the land. I would have been like talking English. That's what I would have been. I know my place. I'm fully aware. This is, you know, I'm nowhere
Castle
I am.
Castle Catholics, I think they called them, didn't they? You used to call them the Castle Catholics back then.
Oh, I think I would have been Protestant in the Orange Order and fucking hated. Rich.
Yeah.
Again. I wouldn't have needed you, Owen. You would have worked for me, bitch.
You didn't have to be. They're funny. I'll go here anyway. It's completely irrelevant. Like, it doesn't make any sense
to us. Welcome to Dublin.
Yes. But not all of them were hated. You could have been. There's a fella called LaCorsty Wheeler, right? And back in the 1920s, he had a place, a big house in Robertstown.
Where's that?
It's Robertstown is outside Naas, right?
No, I wouldn't have been. I would have been further up, but go on.
And he was a general in the British Army and then had this big house. And when he arrived into the area, into Kildare, he started making jobs for everybody and started the industry really thrived as a result of him. And the IRB or the IRA or whoever they were at the time came up to his house one evening and told him, listen, go to Mass, do whatever you want to do. You can go over, you can walk freely around this. We'll leave you alone. They left him alone completely.
Well, that's what I would hope for. But I think we were further up, like the Keynes and Holmes. I just claim Sherlock Holmes as like that. Obviously, we were part of some type of, you know, detective setup with the Holmes. And then the Keynes are just, they were definitely high, like they were... Protestant. My cousin did Who Do You Think You Are, and it caused fucking consternation in the family. So they really stuck with the Moyle side, because like my mom maintained they, even though they were from Drimmer, they were rich because they got piano lessons once a week, and if they were poor, they would have never.
Such and, like, a sign of the times, isn't it? It really is. Like.
And father brought
home. So why would
home,
you get a piano, like, for fuck's sake?
No, but they didn't have the piano in the house. It wouldn't fit in a tenement, but not a tenement. In a, what do they call those kind of like? Oh, the little houses in Drimna. It wouldn't have fit in one of those, but they went into town.
Estate. They're called estates. Like you meet these people from Killarney and they first see terraced houses and they're like, oh my God, why does this person have so many front doors?
I went
like,
to
what's
terrace.
That about?
I went to terrace and then they
they're
were
crazy
into they were semi-detached. But they went to thing and daddy, so my dad refers to my granddad as father, but the other, well, sorry, all the six girls bar one call granddad father, and then one of my aunties calls him, refers to him as daddy, which I always find is really weird. But father always brought home boxes of biscuits, not broken crap, like actual fully boxes of biscuits, and they got sweets. So my mom, so when this was all going on and they, like it was all headlines in the UK, like it was like Moyle's Irish poverty, my aunties were all fucking flat out ringing each other going, poverty, father sent us for piano lessons. So what I'm trying to say is that I would think back in our Protestant kind of heritage, because then there was a break, someone married a Catholic, they had girls, imagine. They stayed Catholic, and then we all got to where we are.
Y'all joined the fold, so to speak.
They let us in.
What's the modern day version of piano lessons? What do kids get now that would have been piano lessons?
That's really exclusive.
Like in 100 years from now, when someone does Who Do You Think You Are? And they say, ah, no, our family were rich because we had, I don't know.
What is the example? You would have said hockey, but that's sure anyone can play hockey nowadays.
Or sailing.
Yeah, sailing. My dad had a boat.
Yeah, my dad had a boat. Because it was when we were growing
sails.
Up. It was sailing or horse riding and hockey. And the hockey.
Yeah, although horse ride, come on, you know. Like, I mean, there's
well, the young
in Ireland,
in Ballier,
anyone, you just can't be have a horse in your middle class. But you can be rich enough, like, you're either.
But it's where you
Ireland,
keep
never
your
rich
horse.
Or poor enough to have a horse.
But it's where.
It's right in the centre there.
It's where you keep your horse, though, isn't it? It's the difference between keeping a horse, like, in your back garden or down in a field and keeping your horse in stables and
so
paying.
It's the difference between keeping your horse on the land you own or the land someone else owns.
Yeah, it's
both so. Dealing with the horse. Like, for us, definitely it was hockey, but we played camogie, so we weren't allowed to hang around with the hockey girls. They tried to get a hockey team in our school, but we all swung too highly because we were all, like, gaheads. So the hockey girls, actually, wasn't just too young for us. Actually, to be honest with you, I think that was a grooming circle.
Oh Jesus Christ!
We were first years and they were in sixth year. There were two blokes trying to set up a hockey team with girls that were full of camogie players. I mean,
I automatically assume they're oddballs because they're trying to introduce a sport as well. That's the weird thing about. That's why I'm like being a middle aged man. Just don't do fucking anything. Don't even go for a walk on your own because someone's going to go look at him. He's out there trying to interfere with squirrels. They're dirty bastards.
I did hear that.
You have no idea. That, I mean, yes, okay. There's definitely a legacy of middle aged men being. Bastards, but you know what I mean.
Motorsport is motorsport still really expensive?
No, motorsport is absolutely not. I was really involved in motorsport, and motorsport is GAA for Protestants. Actually,
oh, really?
It is. It's Protestant GAA motorsport. I used to race up north all the time with lads like with names like Alistair Seeley and Ryan Farquhar and all
they're
these.
They're mad,
boys.
Yeah. They're...
And they're not rich lads. It's just. They just get into it. I don't know how you get into it or how you pay. It's like becomes this big hobby where you have raffles and fundraiser nights and everything and loads of people come together to
very
support
like the GAA.
It. Very much like that, yeah. It's literally Protestant GAA, the way it's run.
So we need to find the equivalent then.
If they put an engine on a fucking cat up there, if they thought it would run it faster. Like,
I think that happens in July.
Lawnmower racing and everything.
Jeez. My family again.
We're not talking to all Larry, the time. We're talking shit.
Anyway. We're just trying to bring.
I'm happy to let you have that conversation.
We're trying to welcome in. O'Magee. O'Magee is here. So basically, we have been trying to get Owen on because I rang your phone. By the way, can I just point out he's open a San Pellegrino underneath the fucking desk, right?
Yeah. Love
is he doing
stuff.
Fucking well for himself? Of course he is fucking $4.99 a bottle of that. No, or
gonna,
are you refilling
really,
that
I'm,
bottle?
I'm going to be absolutely honest, right?
Are you refilling
there it
that
is,
bottle?
Actually. There's the price on it. €1.20.
Yeah, right? I don't know where you're going with your...
Bullshit.
I walked into a little shop this morning and I said, I went in.
They picked them up in the cash and carry and not realise that they could be charging $4.99.
I was actually going to say it to her.
You should do. Behind the counter. You're a nice person.
I was going to say it to her behind the counter, and then I said, oh, if she recognises me from the TV, she'll think I'm a dick telling her
she'll
to fix her prices.
Oh, that's like, a brilliant. I never thought. Of course, you have to carry that around. Yeah.
You're kind of going, ah, no.
You're a man from Who Do You Think You Are, which money was here, right?
Yeah. He told me to give up the smokes.
Yeah.
He asked me, do you know how much money you're losing per six bottles of this that you're selling?
He's like massively underpaying.
Oh, no, totally.
Charging for 120. I'm going to go down and buy a job lot. Where is she? Around the corner?
Yeah, she's just around the corner.
Is that the fruit and veg?
It was a tiny little shop, and it had all like it's
broken
funny.
Windows.
Oh, yeah. No, someone, yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Tiny little shop, and it had just a wall of newspapers and stuff, and then it had like a little section for go back to school, and like it was all like real old school news agent, and there was very little in it.
Massively underselling.
I will say it was a euro for a bottle of Ballygown and 120, so I treated myself to the Pellegrino. Yeah.
Treat yourself.
Yes.
Well, afraid it's because you also knew that you were ripping her off at €2. Yeah. So you were like, I'll take the Pellegrino.
I've tended them in the car.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I'll take everything you have there and I'll be selling them. Anyway, sorry. So what I was saying was, Owen, you might know him if you're living in Ireland, from you're hugely successful. Well, is it
How Successful? Oh, it's fucking huge. The TV show.
The TV show.
How to Be Good With Money, because I'm shite with money, but I watch it every week and hope.
Great TV show that is, by the way.
Thanks.
It's so easy to watch and so informative. Like, it's the anti-finance show, really, in a way that, like, you know where you get these fucking ages every so often, like, it's the self-help book that isn't the self-help book, and it's the exact same as every fucking self-help. But this is actually, it's really accessible, handy, good advice for... Yeah.
So you have a book and a television show.
Both called How to Be Good at Money.
You're not a condescending shit.
Thanks.
I think that's what the difference is, though.
That's what it is, isn't it?
I think that is the difference. Like I'm not going to name anyone, but we've had other people. No, I'm not going to.
Do it.
No, it wouldn't be fair. But we've had other economists on TV that have, like, you know, you're just kind of, I don't know. It's hard to take them seriously. It's hard to relate to them. How about that? Anyhow,
nice.
I can't relate to the fucking lad at all. I think he's very good and all of that. It was great to watch him and stuff, but it's very hard to see his advice in my daily life. Whereas your show, I think, is brilliant for that.
Yeah, and I think one of the things about the show is that we, genuinely, I know people say this all the time, but genuinely, the team, I have never worked on a team that works so well together.
Now you sound like a telly guy.
But
when they say the telly guy goes, oh, it's the team around me.
But I never appreciated that before. Like, it's just everybody knows what their job is. Everybody knows what it is. I'm sitting there and there's a problem with the camera or something else. I know that has nothing to do with me.
You
and I know they
on.
Will be brilliant at fixing it and it looking right and us all working together. And everybody just works really, really closely together for a very intense couple of months. And the people involved, like, think about the people who get involved in the show. They are opening themselves up bare to
they
the whole country.
I have to say, I thought that watching it. Yeah. It's like, whoa.
And do you know what it comes back to? A, there's two things. They want the help and they need the help, right? Yeah. And they know that this, and it genuinely is the best opportunity. You can come to see me in private practice and I can't put
ask you about that
the same amount of time into it as you can put, because if a team, I have a team in the office, but I have a team that's, it's a different intensity when you're on the TV show, right? And everything gets shown. Like, we sent a guy last year for like stop smoking lessons. Do you know
I
what
saw
I mean?
That. Yeah. Yeah. So I saw, like, it was brilliant when you told
it's
him.
All encompassing.
But it was great the way you broke it to him, how quick over, how like fast he can get his mortgage over the years if he cuts out the smokes.
Yes.
If he cut out, so you gave him three different scenarios and how quick it would take, how long each one would take for him to get his dream house.
Yes.
And it was like just the way you broke the information.
Down to
and
the
next thing, he's in classes getting hypnotized. It was fucking, like, it was great, crack.
It was.
Although what they do, what I feel omitted from that bit is when you give up cigarettes, you know, they always go, you'll make 10 grand. And like, if you're like most people, we don't put it in a jar, because then when you give it up, it's like, you've saved 7.5 grand. I'm like, I pissed it away though.
Somebody sent me, it was after that episode, somebody sent me just a screenshot of a joke, and it was the financial planner and the client, right? And it was actually a financial planner and a client. And the financial planner says, you smoke, yes. You spend X amount on cigarettes every week. You drink, yes. You spend X amount on drink every week. Do you know, if you give up the smoke and the drinks, in 5 years from now, you could have a boat? And the client goes, do you smoke? No. Do you drink? No. Where's your boat? You're just like, yeah, okay. But there is. But sometimes one of the big problems we have, right? And it's a problem, and particularly for teenagers. So I go into transition year students and I do a program with them, right? And one of the things you try and teach them is tapping, right? You know the way we all tap with our money, right?
Tap,
we actually spend 15%, between 10 and 15% more money when we tap.
I'm sure we're in total tap.
Yeah.
Total tapped out at the moment.
And you know what? It was a big, big fast food restaurant in the States, sat there and analysed. They introduced it
McDonald's.
In one... Yeah, that's who it was, right? And they went in and they looked at it and they said, right, we put this tapping thing into one of our stores, that's probably a better word than restaurant, right? Into one of our restaurants, and we'll watch how people behave. And what happened was people went up and they tapped and they counted up how much did they spend versus the people who paid in cash. And it was between, I think the figure was actually 12 to 15% more when you tap. And think about it, you're standing in the queue. Will I go large? I don't know if I have enough. Will I get a sundae with that? I don't know if I have enough. And you start thinking about it. Whereas you tap, oh yeah, go large, yeah, grand. Sundae, yeah, grand, bang. And you do it. And what I try to teach to particularly transition year students, but we all should learn from this, is try and think of money in terms of something else. We have genuinely, you know, the way our parents would have said, we've lost the value of money, but we have genuinely lost the value of money.
I thought I had. My kids are even fucking worse.
Yeah. So think about it in terms of time, though.
Mean?
Like, think about, right, if you're on a tenner an hour, just to keep the math simple, you're on a tenner an hour.
Always on a tenner an hour.
Oh, yeah, I know what you're going to say.
You're on a tenner an hour and you find a jumper for 80 quid. Is that work a day's work? Is it worth going to work?
Yeah.
A kind of jumper, is it? But you see my point, and oftentimes, particularly with a transition year student, you're talking to them, you're saying, lads, you've got Saturday. The lads are going off playing football and then they're going to the park afterwards for whatever they're going to do. You're going to miss out on that for
is
the
that
full
bag
day.
Bag of cans worth it?
Yes.
Or can you work all day for the bag of cans
and get a jumper back?
But yeah. I know what you're saying, because like time is the most valuable currency you have, really, especially if you're young, because the clock is ticking.
Yeah.
And if you have to spend like 1 week buying a fucking t-shirt, and as soon as you realise you've wasted the whole week wearing the t-shirt just to get a t-shirt, it does start to sink in.
It does.
Or you would hope it does. But how did you get involved in the schools then? Because I have literally no memory of learning anything about finances
Never.
In school. X plus Y equals shut your fucking mouth was maths I learned in school. And when it came to commerce, it was fill out like ledgers and all this shit. I mean, I was pre-computers, like. And it was just all about messy handwriting. So I learned nothing in school.
Yeah. I think, and my next one up from that is that we had business studies class for first year. I dropped it after first year. No fucking surprise there, because I hated Mr. Cormack and he hated girls. And as punishment, school made him train the camogie team and he was an absolute cock. So that was it. And he was just, I remember him going in and like, you know, the money comes in, the money goes out. And I'm just like, I don't understand any of this. So like that's financially why we're at BJ.
There is money stuff on the curriculum, right? But I don't know where they're at in terms of, I know there was a big rejig of it a couple of years ago. I don't know. I remember I was sitting in a conference one day and I was talking about it and I was saying, yeah, the feedback I'm getting from schools is that they're not getting this stuff taught to them. And there was someone from the department there said to me, we have it on the curriculum and we cover it. And I was like, oh, right, just swallow me up. Like but the kids aren't actually getting what they need from it. And I went in and, okay, I've never said this before. Actually, I've never said this out loud before. But where the schools program came from was, I remember as a kid, every year, it was in secondary school, every year they'd bring in a guest speaker. And I remember like Roddy Doyle came in to speak to us one time and somebody else. And I remember looking at it. And as a kid, I said, I'd love to be invited back to my school someday in my life to be asked to speak to the students. They never asked me. So I created a program just to go in and talk to 30 of them. So that's what happened there.
You should go back to your school.
Yeah, I'm back to my school.
There's your picture on the wall.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, I went looking along there. Yeah.
Wall. Everybody, Aidan Perry.
I know, sorry, me and 30 other people. Like, it's not me and my own.
No, in our school do like a wall of fame.
Ah, no.
So Anna Daly's on it and Aidan Perrer's on it and everything. I just might go and stick a poll right up if we ever get a
But it's interesting, actually, just to another segue to that is, one of the reasons why I love what I do, and there's a couple of reasons why I do what I do, but one of the joys that I got out of it was I had a really good business studies teacher.
Okay.
Right? And I really enjoyed her class. I got on well with her and she just gave me a love for it.
Did you just have a natural kind of thing for it? Like, so were you, like, do you still have your Comfo money?
This is what I was going to ask. Yeah. Remember last week we were talking about this lad I went to school with. He's a millionaire now, but this is why I know two people who are millionaires and they both were born to make money. So in primary school, I was playing chasing with a lad. The two of us on my arse went right through a window, right? You know, I had to get onto the windowsill so you couldn't be caught. And I jumped too fast and went right into the windowsill. And the two of us were dragged in front of the principal. And the principal says, that window is going to cost £20 to replace. Where would your parents get £20? Now, we're in primary school, so we're 10, 11-ish. He took a roll of pounds out of his pocket and went, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, counted them out. And it was war over it. Like, where does a child, with a wad of money, take 20 and walk out the door? rang his parents.
£20 is a lot of money, like.
This is 1986 or something, right? They're like, where does a child like that come up with money? Like, and there's obviously a fucking lie, by the way. No window cost £20 in 1986. And the truth was, the parents went, we can't stop him making money. We give him £1, he buys petrol, he cuts grass all day long, every day. He saves up everything. That lad now owns half of North County Dublin. Like, we're like, were you like that? Were you born to make money? Is it natural to you?
And actually, this is a misconception people have about financial planners. And some financial planners go out there, or the budgeting guys go out there and they do it.
My, you're shy with money on,
but,
aren't you?
But no, I'm not actually shy with money. But what I do is I look after, and good financial planning is about looking after the big long-term stuff first, right? Look after the pension and the savings and the long-term stuff, right? Yeah. So look after the big long-term first. And whatever's left in your bank account, you can enjoy it. Spend it whenever you want.
But you're not thinking about that. Like, so we've loads of questions, right? But like, so when I was in like my 20s, I just thought I was financially invincible. So as in, I got paid, I spent it, I gave, like, I gave Lily's most of my money every weekend.
Didn't do them all that well, did
it? No, it didn't. Like, but we were out, like, I, you know, I was out Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. All I really gave a shit about was like just buying something new to wear. Like, I, like, to me, like, I was just like, everything was just long fingered. I was like, I just didn't care about anything. But then out of nowhere, everything comes crashing around your ears quite quickly. Like, it's a very short transition period between being like out on the rip and then in a relationship and sitting in front of your other half going, so how much money do you have? And how many monies do you have? And like, then we started to like apply for our mortgage and we got refused. But I was like, I don't have anything to be refused for. I couldn't understand why.
Don't start.
We'll get to you in a second. But like, so I have no pension plan. I have savings from the coronavirus. Literally, yep. I've saved because of the coronavirus. But like, when we were doing our mortgage, they kept getting refused. We didn't know why we were getting refused. And like, a mortgage advisor was looking at our stuff going, I just don't understand why. And then it came back that my credit rating was completely shot. But it was all down to a man in a bank who never, I changed my loan like 5 years before that. I changed my loan, but he never did the paperwork on it. So right. They never came looking for money off me. I paid, as I was supposed to, the same amount, direct debit every month, but I was in credit arrears every single. So that took 18 months with a bank to try and figure it out. But like, sure, 6 years before that, 4 years, 3 years before that, sure, I was having the time of my life. Then I'm having a fight with a bank. There's like, where in your life or how do you go from being, or how do you have that conversation? Do you know what I mean? Like, where does that happen?
Well, you
like,
see, that's why, and genuinely, I know I'm kind of tongue in cheek when I'm saying I wanted the school to invite me in, but I do think the 4 year students is the perfect time. You have made very little financial mistakes at that stage, like, if any. Yeah. And remember,
you have nothing to financially make a mistake about.
And remember, the biggest pay rise you get in your life is the first time you get a job. You'll never get a pay rise that big again, right? Yeah. So if you can get the kids at that stage, and even earlier, in fact, if you can get them earlier again and you can get it into them, but it's never too late.
Like, so would you go around the Confo and communion classes going, here's what you need to be doing?
There is actually.
They make an obscene amount of money.
Communion.
They need to be taxed, proper taxed.
But they're spending all their money on piano lessons.
Yeah, of course they're fucking millionaires. Oh my God, I still can't believe I'm expecting to give 50 quid to a fucking 11-year-old. I can't believe I'm not doing it.
Give them the 50
I'm
quid.
I'm not fucking doing it.
As a financial advisor, so PJ has a nephew. They have a small family, and I have said, like, my family's small as well. I was like, my godson made his confirmation or his communion, so I gave him 50 quid because he wasn't going to make thousands. In fairness, actually, he ended up making quite a bit.
Yeah.
But I said, I told PJ, because obviously we know how wealthy PJ is. Homeless, but wealthy, not in the truest sense. But I was like, give the kid 50 quid, don't be a shite bag. As a financial advisor, would you agree? Whereas he
I'm not giving the kid 50 quid. I'm not fucking doing it.
But sorry, how are you going to feel about putting 20 quid in a car?
He wouldn't give a shit. He gave him 2 quid.
I gave him 2 quid for his communion. He can fucking take a fiver.
And the back.
What's he going to do if he breaks a window in school? He won't have enough money to pay for it.
Way more than 20
quid. And he learned the hard way. He won't get bailed out by Gary like I did.
It depends. Like 50 quid, I just, you see, I think again, 50 quid and 20 quid, like, you can't give like 25. You have to give an even note. Yeah.
And then there's people saying you should give 100 if you're the sponsor to a child. Are you
are you
kidding me?
Are you the sponsor?
No, I turned down the job.
I was too expensive.
Yeah, I'm doing the job. That's like, I'm really, oh, do you want to be best man at my wedding? Oh yeah, great. I get to do everything, have half the fun. Go fuck yourself on your wedding. I'm not doing it.
Like, no way.
Right, well, I ask you some of the questions that came in.
Have a good crack.
But this is, they kind of all, they all buy into this as well, right? Because this could have been written by me as somebody who turns 40 in 2 days' time. Is it worth starting a pension aged 40 when I can only contribute 300 euro per month? It's more than I can contribute to a pension.
Sorry, this is a misconception. It's worth starting a pension the day before you retire. Like this?
Oh, really?
Oh, absolutely.
Like, do you have a pension?
I do, yeah.
Do you?
Yeah.
Of course, yeah, you fucking do.
I don't like paying tax. That's why.
Yeah.
What? Is it a tax break?
Yeah. Oh, God, yeah.
Huge tax break. It's the biggest tax break.
Let me be really clear about what happens here, right? For if you're on the higher rate of tax.
I don't know. I have to ask George.
If you make more than about 35, 36, 37
probably
grand
not,
a year, right?
Fair.
And it depends. Maybe Joey's taken some of your credits and it depends.
Yeah,
he has,
yeah.
But it's about 35, 36, 37. It's 36,700, 37,800. Doesn't matter, right? Around that money. Once you go into the higher rate of tax, you put a tenner into your pension and you get £4 back in tax.
So you just start a pension fund in a
bank, pension house, any pension advisor, just go and get some advice. But it's that simple. You put £6 in.
You mean go and get some advice? Oh, that's why you're here?
Personal advice.
That's why you just went to go and get some advice. I'm like, how to be good with money. Name of book and show, Owen McGee. I mean, it's all there.
Yes. Well, what I'm saying is you put money into a pension, you turn £6 into £10 straight away. If you're on the lower rate of tax, you turn £8 into £10 straight away. I'd often start when we do corporate gigs, right? And you'd be up and you'd be standing in front of a couple of hundred people. Well, you used to be. You'd be standing in front of a couple of hundred people and you'd say to them at the start, who's paying into the company pension plan? And the hands would all go up and say, okay, who's putting any extra in? Because they all have to be in the pension plan. Okay, who's putting any extra in? And you'd maybe get a third of the room with their hand up. And just like you said there a second ago, PJ, at the very end of the conference, I'd finish off and I'm ruining all my conference, my corporate gigs from now
on. They're on hold at the moment anyway.
Very end of the gig, you'd say, who wants to pay more tax this year? And no hands would go up. And that's the point. People think of pensions, oh, I'm putting money away for later on in my life and I'm going to use it then. And sure, I need to enjoy today. Sorry, do you want to pay more tax or do you not want to pay more tax? That's what it's got to do with. Nothing more. For now.
You have a private pension fund.
Private pension
doesn't
fund
matter.
Is.
It doesn't matter, does it not?
No.
How the fuck do you not have a mortgage and you know this?
I fuck every week I say I don't know why I don't have one.
Right, well, get back to it. So there's loads about that. People are like, is 43 too old? It's like,
no.
So it doesn't matter how old you are.
Doesn't matter.
Even if you're 40 in 2 days' time, you can start putting a pension in. I know. Last week I was cool about being 40. This week I'm fucking not.
It's the best.
I actually think I'm sweating there.
I was 40 in March, actually.
In lockdown?
Yeah.
You're an 80s baby as well as me.
I'm a Pope's child.
Yeah, same. Oh, you were a proper Pope.
Bang on. But like, was there three John Pauls in my year in school?
Oh, there was more in my school. But you know, like, I went through a period of like scoring constant Pauls. They're pricks. Like, but it was just because there was loads of them. Because there was John Pauls, and Pauls.
You know, all of them. The Phoenix Park was great.
I was
riding for Jesus. It was a great time.
Came in, he said, I bless you.
It was a great time.
He's like, throw away your shackles. Yeah, see, I was August. So he came in. When did the Pope arrive?
1979.
Yeah, but what month was it?
I think it was 9 months before March. So what's that, July or
you were
August?
Proper. I think my parents were still riding high quite literally at that stage. And then, sure, my mum was like out drinking and couldn't get the heat into her and didn't understand what was wrong with her. Like, she'd already been to this rodeo twice before and she couldn't understand what was wrong with her. Eventually, she went down to her local GP and was like, I just don't think I'm right. And he was like, would you be pregnant? She was like, I'm out. Could be. It turns out she was.
Yes.
So like, meanwhile, the rest was all pissing on sticks. Anyway,
Go back to your question, right? It's never too late.
Never too late for a pension.
Never too early.
Right.
Okay. And
people, how do you mean by too early? Like 18?
Actually, I give you a great story. My 16-year-old nephew, you need to be working to put money into pension. No point in putting money into pension.
If you're not a part-time job like in Tyler's, obviously they don't exist anymore.
This is actually what happened. He was 15 and three quarters, living in Sydney, and he's still living in Sydney. And he,
over there. Just not come back?
My brother's over there. This is his child.
Did he go on his own?
This is my nephew. And he rang and he says, oh, I've just got a job in, I think it was Woolworths or something, whatever. One of the Tesco's type
thing. Again, I reiterate, I said Tyler, you said Woolworths. Two things that haven't been around since we were born.
Well, it is in Sydney, but it was one of the big supermarkets he was working in. He rang me, he says, oh, I'm getting a job. And I said, all right, okay. What are you doing? He says, I'm doing 10 hours a week. And I said, okay, that's kind of maybe 2 days or whatever it is. And my question is, they want me to sign up to a pension. I'm 15. Will I sign up to the pension? Right. And I said, well, let's do the maths on it. And what are you going to make? He says, I'm going to work $15 an hour, $150 a week, right, is what he was going to make. And I said, great, sounds perfect. And how much do they want you to put? If I put in $10, they'll put in $20 a week.
What?
Yeah. Now, he wasn't earning enough money to get taxed. So usually you'd say pension, when there's no tax relief, there's no point, right?
Yeah.
So I said, okay, but there's 20 quid extra. They're going to put, that was just the standard for them. I worked it out. If he did just his 30 quid a week, so 10 from him and 20 from them, 30 quid a week, every week from then until he turned 65. Now, think about this. The average pension pot in Ireland has around 120 grand in it when people retire. Which is nowhere near enough, right? But it's around 120. How much do you think?
Hell, I don't have one, and I don't even have nowhere near enough. And I deserve
if stock markets perform in the next 50 years, which is a time period you were looking at, as they performed in the last 50 years, and they might, let's not get into that, right? But if they do in the next 50 years, as did in the last 50 years, how much do you think would be in his 30 quid a week pension pot when he retires? Go on, PJ.
I'm going to
buy. Yeah, probably got like $1.5 million or something.
2.2 million.
Jesus Christ.
What do you think he did? Do you think he went into the pension?
Of course.
Do you?
I don't know. He was young. He probably went, fuck this.
He left the job 3 weeks later. Yeah. And he hasn't worked since.
You can't think that far ahead.
That's what I mean. I couldn't think that far ahead at 28. Never mind.
But see my point there, right? If he's going to have 2.2 million by putting a tenner and they're matching by 20, which was generous, right? So he's going to put that much money away. Tenner's not going to hurt him. It's the biggest pay rise he's got in his life. He's gone from zero to $150 a week. $140 a week, $150 a week. Doesn't make any difference to him. Yet, he waits till he's 64 and a half years of age and he has to find 2.2 million over the next 6 months to retire with the same pension pot. Do you see what I mean? The earlier you start it.
Yeah, but it's the same as the SSIA. Like, I had that and then I was going out in the piss and I had no money, so I just cashed it in.
Yeah.
Now, we had a great few days.
But the other thing about pensions is never too early, never too late. As long as you're paying tax, it makes sense. But there's never too little amount of money to put into pensions. I think a lot of people say, sure, I haven't got enough money to put into pensions. You can get into them for like 100 quid a month or whatever.
50 quid a month.
Yeah, I think there might be some of them out there you can do at 50 quid a month. I think some of the legislation says they have to accept 50 quid a month with one of the types of contracts.
Right, okay.
But do anything. Like, do so small amount that you'd be embarrassed if you couldn't actually put it aside once a month.
But 100 quid is a lot.
A month, 25 quid a week, you get tax relief on it. It's probably only costing you 15.
A lot of people would go, like, for me, I'd go 100 quid a month into a pension is a lot. Like,
when was the last time you got a takeaway?
Shut up.
Yeah, this is it.
I feel attacked.
I had a sack of cans in the takeaway in the gap. That's it right there. Like. Does almost everybody end up on state pension eventually then? If most people retire and they've got 120 grand and then that runs out after 2-3 years maybe.
Yeah.
Does almost everyone end up on a state pension?
Everyone starts on state pension as well. So from 68 years of age onwards now, you get 200 and odd quid a week, right?
Just from being that age.
If you pay enough PRSI. And people think PRSI is tax. It's not. It's a pay-related social insurance. It's an insurance,
right?
What
if you're not working?
If you're not working, you may not have the stamps to do it. And if you don't have means, you'll get a non-contributory state pension. So if you don't have enough money and you're broke, they'll say, oh, here, you didn't do enough PRSI, but here's a pension for you instead.
Okay.
And it's a little bit less, but it's difficult enough to qualify for it. Okay, so they'll look.
Is there old people out there with no pension?
No, because if they're that broke, they will get it. But it's not enough. It's not enough to survive on. And what I will say to you is those state pensions, they won't be there, right?
Yeah.
At the moment, there's 5 people working, paying PRSI, right? And every 5 people working, there's 2 people retired.
Yeah.
Now, when you pay your PRSI, it goes towards those 2 people who are retired, but also goes to everybody who's on unemployment or disability or all of the other social welfare stuff that we pay out. So there's 5 people working for every 2 people retired. By 2050, there'll be 2 people working for every 1 person retired.
Right. Wow.
He's a bucket of shit, isn't he? Well, there you go. That's like, so you reckon they'll do away with it?
Yeah. They will have to change it dramatically.
Yeah, yeah.
And one of the things that they were doing in recent times were they were introducing this auto enrollment. So the stats will show you that if you go into a job and you have to sign an application form to join a pension, there's very little take up on it, right? If you have to go into a job and you have to sign a form to say, I don't want to join the pension. You get about 85, 86% take up. So if you have to sign the form to say, I don't want to do that, you won't bother signing the form and you'll just do it, right? Yeah. So they've introduced auto-enrolment in the UK in 2011 and it's been very successful. And auto-enrolment is that thing that you just join the pension automatically. We're supposed to be rolling out in 2022, 23.
That won't happen with everything that's gone on.
It's interesting because it was well behind. It was about 6 or 12 months behind before COVID. And it's just kind of gone. I haven't heard much now. I haven't been looking for much of it. And maybe there is still stuff going on about it, but you can see it as a perfect reason why it's going to be pushed back.
Are we all fucked next year for tax because of COVID payments? If you were getting a COVID
tax
payment.
Oh, if you're going to, actually, I put a post up on my Instagram.
Loads of people messaged about that.
Yeah.
Is that people who've been on, is it called the PUP? Is that what it's called?
There's the PUP and the wage subsidy. And some people don't realise. So both the wage subsidy and the PUP, what happened was you were paid the money. So wage subsidy, just for anybody who doesn't know, if your boss found, oh God, we're going to close down here, they could go to the government and government would pay somewhere around 70% of people's wages, right? So your boss got 70% of your wages from the government and they paid it to you. They might have topped you up to 100% by paying them out of their own pocket. Your boss put the other 30%, or not their own pocket, but out of the business, they paid the other 30%. Some people got reduced, some people didn't. The 70% that came from the government is taxable. So you have to pay tax on it, but there was no tax taken out of it in real time. So the tax hasn't been taken out of it yet. Now,
it all just run through, say Sage or whatever it is. So it just all ran through the books as normal, but instead of those cuts coming out of it, they never happened. But ultimately, they have to be paid back.
They will have to be paid back. Absolutely, 100% they have
to be paid back. So it's like a limited company account, basically. You're using the money and you have to remember, as you're using this money, that 40% or whatever percent
is going to disappear.
Not yours. And you're actually spending money you don't own, kind of.
And most PAYE workers, most people who work for somebody else, they see the bottom right-hand corner their pay slip and say, yeah, that's my money. For the first time ever, the bottom right hand corner of their pay slip has got money in there that's owed to the tax man.
Yeah. Now, it's a lesson hard learned as someone who's been there and done that. That is a lesson very hard learned.
I put a post up on Instagram and Facebook and 600,000 people looked at it.
Jesus Christ.
And it was basically saying, you do know whether it's PUP, which is the 350 a week, or wage subsidy, there's no tax being taken out of that in real time. And just for people who didn't see that post, right? In simple terms, if you earn less than 15 grand in total for the entire year this year, you probably won't have to pay any tax. Okay. If you earn between 15 and 35,000, I'd suggest you put 30% of the wage subsidy or PUP away. So for every 100 quid you got, put 30 quid away. And if you earn more than 35 grand this year, put 50% of what you got on the wage subsidy or PUP away.
God, it's a big ask for people, like, because it's not a huge amount of money.
But they should have more money in their pocket, remember. When they got, some people came, oh, I'm on the wage subsidy, I got a pay rise. No, you didn't. And then some people didn't realise they were coming out with more or less the same money, but their boss wasn't paying them that
30%. See, this was the thing, wasn't it? Because I think people got really lost in the, because it was, I think it was that bracket of if you were in the, what is that smaller tax bracket, whatever
under
it was.
Under 35. Let's round it to 35. Yeah.
That they were, a lot of them were getting the PUP. They were getting the 350 a week. And then I think it seemed, but this is just my perception. I could be wrong. You'd know better than I. It seemed lots of people who were on those upper levels were all paid by their employers. Maybe that's 70% or whatever.
Oh, no, absolutely.
So ultimately, when their payroll runs, how many months are they going to come looking for that back?
In January, what will happen is, because nobody actually, some people come to me on Instagram all the time, oh, can you just tell me how much I'm going to have to pay? Here's my, like, people send you your pay slips and everything, saying, can you just tell me?
Discuss our private business.
and they send it to you, can you tell me? You don't know until the end of the year. You could get a bonus in January, or sorry, in November, at the end of this year, that throws you all out. So it's very hard to say. And the 30% and the 50% I'm talking, it's over-egging it, to be honest, but most likely. Yeah, because what will happen is in January, revenue will look backwards and they will say, okay, this is how much you earned for the year. This is how much tax you should have paid. This is how much tax you actually paid. And here's the difference and you owe us that money.
But are they going to break that down over the 12-month period?
If you have it, the ideal here is you write a check and you give it to them and say, right, go away.
No one will have that.
Well, people, 600,000 people hopefully will.
They won't. That's the most optimistic thing you've said about other than me getting a pension is that some people are on their absolute uppers. There is no way, like, in hell, come January, people are going, it's like when you get, you know, when you start a job and your tax isn't sorted and you get emergency tax and you get that first paycheck and you're like,
oh yeah, you freak. Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? So unless revenue go, right, here's your, you owe, I think I got done for tax, like, after we got married, because it was all over the place, and I owed, I think, like 1,500 quid or whatever it was in tax. So they just took an extra bit out of my wages and that's every single month. That's revenue, what they should be doing.
No, sorry, revenue have said, yeah. What I'm saying is ideally you write the cheque and you give it to them. That revenue has said, we are not going to create financial hardship on people who didn't allow for this. So what you will end up doing is you'll pay more tax next year because your tax credits will be adjusted and you'll pay a little bit more tax next year and maybe even the year afterwards.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, they will spread it out. But that's not ideal. Like, think about it. You're saying that's really tough on people. These are people who had a payment coming in. There were other people who... like their wages just stopped. They were dropped right down. Maybe they were on the ordinary social welfare payment, which was 203 a week as opposed to the 350. Now, there were some adjustments made to that. So there were people who were cut completely. One of the things that's really important about the wage subsidy scheme, particularly the wage subsidy scheme, was we know from financial history, right, that if you lose your job, you come in, you sit on the couch and you go, I don't know where my next pay pack is going to come from. That causes you serious financial stress even after you get back into a job. Okay. You're on catch up, but you're also scared. You've taken a serious financial hit. What's going to happen with this thing is at some stage, this whole thing will be fixed with some type of medical solution. It might be a vaccine. It might be just 3 minute testing. So I'm walking into the studio, I test myself and I give you my result and then I walk into the studio because I'm clear. It might be, who knows what the medical, but sometime we'll get a medical solution. When we get the medical solution, the macro world will be fixed. What I mean by the big business stuff will be fixed at that stage. Okay. When it's fixed, they will be ready to roll. But we need the micro economy. We need PJ, you, me, all spending money to get the economy going again. Now, what the wage subsidy did was it didn't dent people's confidence. It kept their connection between them and their employer. It meant that they had a wage coming in. And it meant as soon as the employer was ready to get things up and running again, they didn't have to go looking for people to find to work in the place. And it continued on. So it should give them financial confidence that as they feel confident, like to sit in restaurants and to spend their money, that the micro economy should get back up and running.
Well,
again.
I have to say, via Just Eat, and I've already got your judgment. Via Just Eat, I have massively contributed to my micro in climate in terms of the local takeaways. Like, I have gotten takeaway food quite a lot over the past couple of weeks. But in fairness, I think it is one of those things that, because like me, I understand you get it, but I think like me, I find tax terrifying. I find, and it's always that thing that, like, I obviously, because I'm self-employed now, I go into George, my accountant, hand him all of my invoices, and then he comes back with a big scary figure, and then I sit there going, shit, Joey, where are we going to get this money from? And then you have to pay it back. You know what I mean? So it is, and because I know that there was something that said, somebody said about self-employed people this year that they can get a tax back. So someone had insted that, that if you're self-employed, if you earn a certain amount, that you can get your tax rebate on 2019.
Yeah, and the thing about it is there are so many different incentives.
Can I get free money from 2019?
There's incentives. It depends. Yeah. Like, there's things where they're throwing grants at you. They're throwing different things at you. And what we're going to find is you see all those self-employed things. Some of that stuff is still being ironed out and we're still not 100% sure what's going to happen with it. The government will tell you, no, it's very clear. But we will see in practice, this theory and this practice, and these things can work together. As we come closer to October and self-employed people are starting to do their tax returns, it'll be everywhere and we'll all be very aware of it. Okay. And we'll really know what's available to us and not. Like this, and there's also things that falls through the loops. Like, there's things about you can get money off the government to change your workplace to make it COVID friendly, but B&Bs didn't get it. And you're kind of going, why did they fall through the price? And now they fix that and B&Bs get it. Do you know what I mean? So there's often these little things that get fixed. But what I would say is that we do need to go out and spend more money. There are 2 million people who are better off in this country, who are better off as a result of COVID. And the reason why, because their wages stayed exactly the same and their expenses dropped through the floor.
Big time, yeah. But that's what's making this a really weirdly unusual. Well, yeah, I don't spend anything anymore. I'm the worst fucker. Like, if money doesn't move, it doesn't grow. And I'm not moving shit. Like, I'm the worst. Like,
when it comes PJ, this is what we need, because you're like, you're the yin and yang of my relationship. I want to move the money and you're Joey who doesn't want to move the money and then we have own. So
I'm a hoarder. I see myself more as a collector than a trader. So it's like, but isn't that what's causing, like, what is looking like it's going to cause a very uneven type of recessions? Whereas, like, recessions before, everybody drops back 6, 7, 8 notches. So the people who are better off are still better off, but they've all taken a hit. But like with this one, like you said, 20%, 30% of people are going to do better than ever.
Yes.
And then you get people who are absolutely going to be nailed and terrified. I have friends who are like doing so well in the entertainment business and they're out delivering Chinese meals now.
Yeah.
So it's really looking, it's so uneven and sketchy that way.
And actually the people who got hit worst, statistically the people who got worst are lower paid earners and women.
Really, yeah.
Welcome to my world.
Yeah.
And that's because...
Just because the type of jobs that they have, and the particularly lower paid if you're doing hospitality at all. And like your industry must be absolutely...
Well, it doesn't exist.
Shitting itself.
Like, it doesn't exist. It's gone. Like, it literally doesn't exist. So it's not a matter of... It's like but way it must beyond be, shitting
PJ,
itself.
Can I ask you, PJ, like, have you done any of these online stuff or any of these kind of stand-up type...
Use your microphone.
I'm lucky, though. I'm lucky because I stopped gigging 2-3 years ago.
Okay.
So for me, I was just like... Again, a very lucky decision where I decided I'm going to just focus on radio. Mm. So I still did a lot of other work outside. I stopped. That's gone. Mm. So I'd say my wages have dropped back about 60% to what they were.
Right.
So I'm all right. I still have my radio gig. So I'm grand.
Okay.
It's the lads who I worked like 2 years ago, I was gigging with constantly. Mm. And the people who are running those venues. And everybody in that industry now, like, with no idea when it's going to come back. Like, summer next year, people are starting to think they have to survive too. And that's like sort of a good, maybe best case scenario.
Yeah.
Whereas in March, we're thinking, geez, maybe sure by August we'll be hopeful. Hopefully, the Electric Picnic will still happen.
Yeah.
But like, so I don't know. I consider myself, I can't complain. I'm getting through pretty okay.
Interesting. Do you notice much? You'd have a lot of contacts in the industry, in your industry in the UK. Do you notice any difference between.
I actually don't. I've never worked in the UK.
Really? Okay.
I've never wanted to.
And what about lads and people who have gone from here to there?
I haven't a clue. I'm really the wrong person to ask.
What's interesting about it is PwC did some research on CEOs worldwide, right? And this was a couple of months old now, but it was interesting at the time because CEOs worldwide were asked, when do you think that the recovery will start? And worldwide, they said 6 months. The Irish lads, 12 months.
What's
the UK?
A country used to...
lads and women. I've got to be very politically correct. But the CEOs in Ireland just felt it was going to take longer. Now, that can be...
because we're pessimistic.
You could say it's because we're pessimistic. I actually genuinely... I think it's a good laugh to say it's pessimistic, but I genuinely think it's because we have a much more global view, right? Okay. In Ireland, as CEOs, you're looking at the world. And one of the problems is that the CEO of a big multinational based in... the US, let's say, with a plant here or something going on here, they're going to fix the US before they're going to worry about fixing Ireland. So if you're the boss here, you're saying, we'll be lower down the rung and we'll be fixed later. So that's maybe where it is. We have a bit of a global view about it. But it is, it's a scary time for lots of industries and lots of industries are worried about it. But there are 2 million people who need to spend. There are 2 million people out there.
What should you be spending on? Just generally bits and pieces? Anything. Like
just keep money
just spend
moving.
Money. Keep the money moving. And
I am going to take that and bring it home to my husband.
Yes.
the power of... We need to save for pension and spend it as soon as possible.
Yeah.
And we have absolutely no savings for our kids whatsoever. They don't have savings accounts. Like, we set the Usheens up and then we close the Bank of Ireland account, so it's in an envelope.
But actually, that's worth asking you, Owen. Is that a thing now with the millennial generation as well? Mm. Like, they must be finding it harder to save than any other generation
and
before them.
Like,
so they have children now and then this is happening and they've no savings and they, like you said, very few of them probably have pensions.
Yeah.
Like, there must be real panicking at that specific
generation. There is real
panic.
And you know,
a lot of them would know where to live.
And you know what else? If you find that, again, research will show you, if you come out of college and start a job this year, right, you will take a lesser salary than you should have taken because you just want a job and you will never make that up in your career. You will be dented forever, right?
Whoa.
There was a lot of the big consulting firms this year who would go in with their graduate program. So they'd go into fourth-year college students and they'd bring them in for their work experience and they'd pick out, you're good, and we want you to do our graduate program next year, and they picked them out. They went back to them this year. And they said, look, tell you what we'll do. We'll give you $5,000 or $6,000 or $7,000 if you go off and do a master's and come back to us in a year.
Wow.
Jeez. And there's a whole pile of students now who did graduate from their degree have now gone off and done it. And these are for the big...
They'd already planned on going into this year as their first working year.
Yeah, I think that's a brilliant move for them. Like a brilliant... If I had a choice and if I had a child of college graduation year this year, I'd be really encouraging them. This is your... Like, you can't even... I was about to say, I'd be encouraging them, this is your year to go off and do your holiday around the world. You can't even do that. Like, but... do a master's or continue your education, because starting now will hamper your salary and you'll never make up that shortfall.
We're in fucking trouble. Like, when my age becomes pensioners and this age steps in, they're going, we're not paying for you old bastards anymore. Like, we hadn't got the opportunities. We, like, don't have the properties. We didn't get the right to buy a house. We can never catch up on the money that was being made before. They're going to be like, we're not paying for
but
you.
And but the government aren't giving us our pensions.
Well, the us, that won't be given it because the younger people now are going to be saying, we don't want
to
pay into it.
That's what I'm saying, the government are going to, by the time it comes to the whole government pension scheme will be completely different. We won't be getting that. And then and then the young people who was at their prime, they were like, fuck, he's all got your gaffes.
But you know what I am going to say about this, right? And you're going to be surprised with this. This is good news, right? Please. You're saying we're doomed and we're done and this is the worst thing ever.
Yes.
Yeah. Every if you take stock markets as an example, stock markets are the best reference for how the world is doing, right? So how do shares go up or do they go down? Every 3 to 5 years on average for the last 100 years, we've had a major event like this, right? This time it's COVID. 2010 was kind of Brexit, Trump stuff. It kind of messed things, or 2015, excuse me. Prior to that was the global financial crisis. Now, global financial crisis in 2008 was the last worst one. Before that, you have to go all the way back to 1929. Right?
The Depression.
Yes. But there was every 3 to 5 years, stock markets go down on average minus 31%. Right? People call that a stock market crash. I call it a temporary decline. And there's a big difference because it's a decline and it's temporary and it fixes and we move on. Right? So we might feel right now we're in the middle of this thing. It's never happened before. It's affecting the entire world and everything is different. I'm 20 years advising clients and I have heard at least 12 times where the cleverest of people standing on a TV show or sitting on a TV show saying, this time is different, right? And of all these temporary declines that happen every 3 to 5 years, 80% of them will be completely fixed within 3 years. So it's not, and these are facts. These are 100 years empirical evidence that backs us up.
It's not anecdotal. I can never say that word.
Anecdotal. Yeah.
Anecdotal. An antidote is exactly, ironically, what we fucking need now.
I always get those two mixed up. It's always like, right.
But it does feel different, but actually, and it feels different. And you know, people are dying, so I have to be really careful when I'm saying this stuff because you could get lambasted for saying, oh, hold on a second, you're saying it's not different. People are dying, right? Let's accept that. And that's a horrendous element of it.
But then people die in the last. Like, I mean, mental health kills people, and a lot of people, like, absolutely, in the last recession, were lost because of it, and, you know, and all of that.
But my point is this feels different, but from a macro economy point of view, this happens every 3 to 5 years.
People say, isn't
that an amazing thing to hear, though? Like, you know, honestly, because every time you hear news, it's so doom and gloom, and, you know, there's some guy telling you how this has never been seen. Like, every time you turn on the news, we have never seen the likes of this before. There's never been like this before, you know. And immediately you're just picturing yourself in a ripped pair of britches at the fucking soup kitchen the following week.
That's actually brilliant what you just said. And you've just robbed, I'm putting an Insta story together, and not a story, but a video together. And I kept meaning to do it since last Friday, right? And I haven't done it. And I'll put it up now and you can share it with everybody, right?
I'm not on social media.
Oh, Jesus. You're useless to me then. But this is really what you just talked about there is the doom
that
and the gloom.
Thing,
the doom, gloom, everything is falling apart and the world is messed up, right? There's an article that I pulled out, and I actually used it in the book, right? And there's an article I pulled out where the headline, it was across Bloomberg, all the big headline papers, newspapers, online and in print. And I remember seeing it one day, I was walking into a shop and I saw it and thinking, Mark Zuckerberg wipes $4 billion off his net worth. Now, net worth is you take everything you own, you clear off all your loans and the check you have left over, right? Okay. Yeah. So he wipes $4 billion. Now, at the time, I think Mark Zuckerberg was kind of 30 or so, right? Or 32, right? And he just lost $4 billion and it was making the headlines. Let's say he started early and he was working at 15. He was working for 15 years. He's now 30 years of age and he just lost $4 billion. After he lost the $4 billion, he had $62 billion net worth. Now, why did the headline not say, Mark Zuckerberg wipes $62 billion onto his net worth in 15 years? It didn't. It said he'd lost $4 billion.
But that's what it is.
It gives you a 7 day.
Yeah. And interestingly enough, the reason why I want to put the Insta story out there is because last Friday, he broke $100 billion.
Oh, my God.
That man is worth $100 billion.
What can you do?
No, it's deadly about Mark Zuckerberg. He bought his house and he bought the house next door because he wanted privacy.
I mean, that's it.
That's it. Like, what does wealth look like? That's it,
what
right?
It is, yeah.
I hate my neighbours. Buy them out, get them out, ship them out.
There we go.
I'm not keeping my dogs in there.
That's the equivalent in the piano lessons. Buying the gas.
Yeah, that's it. There it is.
We finally found it.
Which brings us to the housing market then, right? Because you're saying spend money, right?
PJ's trying to spend money on a gas.
But obviously, this is now is this now an absolutely terrible time to buy, to make big purchases in your life?
To apply for a mortgage, like, try and get a mortgage.
And is it a bad time to start a pension? Like, could you get into a pension now and then watch the thing fall off a cliff in like a year's time?
Can you take your pension away?
So, well, yeah, remember in the first recession how many people had put their pension was based on property, for example, and then it all just disappeared overnight.
I just want to put it into an account somewhere.
No, you don't.
You see, this is what they'll tell you. They'll say cash pensions don't grow enough. And, you know.
Where do I put my pension? Where do I put my 100 quid a month?
No brainer. 60-40 portfolio. 60% in shares, 40% in bonds. You buy, like when I put a portfolio together for...
Don't understand.
No, but you're going to understand it,
no,
right?
You see, I love that. Like, you see, this is...
You're going to understand, I promise.
The difference between me, right? So I liked English in school. I loved King Lear, Wuthering Heights. I understood it.
We did the Leaving Cert the same year because I did both of those books as well.
We did it in 1997, right? So I got my results on my 17th birthday, right? And I understood it. I was, I was exceptional. I don't say that about myself. I was exceptionally good at English. Like, I got an A in honours English, right? I had to almost do fucking remedial maths. And I remember my maths teacher going...
That's a common trend in our business, though. I sit down and argue with people in the entertainment business about who was shitter at maths.
Yeah.
It's a common trend. We all got into what we got into because we thought we didn't have to do business.
Yeah, that's it.
Business chases you down and it pins you to the ground and it puts a rock on your chest. And here we all are now completely confused.
But you said there you were like, put 100 quid into a pension. I'm like, okay, I'm going to go and ring Joey and go, we need to find 100 euro for me a month and put it into the pension. I presume he just rings a man in AIB or somewhere and goes, can you just open a pension account for Sam?
I bet you George will help you.
Of course George will. He's fucking accountable. He'll charge me for it. But that's the thing. Like, I just don't. I find finance terrifying. I just don't understand it. Like, I just.
But it is. Look.
But you get it.
I get it.
So for idiots like me.
But like, sorry, look, do you know what? There's a great book out there called How to Be Good at Money and it explains it all very clearly. But no, the thing about it is sometimes, like, there's pensions and the only thing people need to know about pensions is, do you want to pay more tax or less tax? I want to pay less tax, do a pension then. Right.
But you're saying put a 60-40, like...
Okay, so 60-40, when it comes to investing,
so
right?
If you don't have an... I have an account and I can ring George, but the only reason I have an account is because I'm self-employed and I didn't have one in Joey, so we have to get you an
account. But it's confusing even if you have an accountant because they'll try... Because that's the first thing you'll stumble across is everybody tries to sell you a package then. Mm. And that's where I got really confused because knowing nothing about it.
And the problem with it is that, look, and to be honest with you, accountants, it's not really their game, right? I was joking when I said George, because the problem with, I can't prepare someone's accounts. I'm like an accountant.
You're a financial advisor.
No, I'm a financial planner. And actually what the difference there is, right? An accountant looks backwards at your finances and tells you where you are today. A financial planner looks at where you are today and looks forwards.
Right, okay.
Okay, so a good accountant and a good financial planner together give you a real, holistic,
number.
Right? View of where you were and where you're going. And right. That's the idea, right?
I'll give you his number.
Okay.
He's on holidays. He's back today.
But when it comes to investing property is made, in my opinion, is made completely overly complex to create jobs for the boys. Investing property is really, really simple.
Right.
You think about it. What do you want to do? And some people come to me and say, will I buy property or will I buy shares, right? And even the word shares, people go, oh, Jesus, what's that mean? It just means you own a tiny, tiny bit of Google. Or Microsoft or CRH or whatever it is, right? And what you do is you go out and you just say, I just want to buy the entire market, right? I want to buy
a little bit of everything.
A little bit of everything.
Like a pick and mix.
Yeah, exactly the same as a pick and mix. And when you put a portfolio, I hate using that word, when you put a pension together properly, you probably will have exposure to around 13,500 different companies. You'll have a tiny bit of 13,500 companies. You don't have to pick the 13,500 companies.
I just put my money in every month and some might win and some might lose.
Some might lose, but
and
over
then ultimately
time...
ultimately when I get to 28 years' time, there might be something there.
Yeah.
Okay.
And sorry, over 28 years, we have never had a no-brainer portfolio, which is 60% in the biggest stock, biggest companies in the world, and 40% where you give a loan of your money to companies and a loan of your money to governments. That's called bonds, right? So you have shares and you have bonds. 60-40 has never had a seven-year period or more, ever, where you would have lost money.
Right, okay. So back to mortgages.
But that question I was just going to ask you now as well. Like, is this now a financial crisis? Is it a good time to make a big investment like that? Rather, whether it be a pension, whether it be a house, whether
Let's think about this, right? Imagine you walked into a garage today, right? What you used to, when motorsport, it was bikes, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was bikes you were into, right? But imagine you walked in, we'll use the car, it's easier for me to get my head around. You walk into a showroom today and you see a car and you love it, yeah. Right? And it's 20 grand, let's say. You go home tonight and you think to yourself, geez, you know what I might do? I might buy that. No, you know what? I'm going to buy it. And you go back in tomorrow morning. As soon as you walk in the door, you say, listen, I'm here for that car. And the sales guy says to you, do you know what? Some stuff happened overnight. It's not 20 grand anymore. It's 15 grand.
Yeah.
Are you going to buy it?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I was going to buy it at 20, right?
Okay, you're going to buy it at 20 and now it's 15. So we're in the middle of a temporary decline or a stock market crash. Shares have gone from here to here. Google is still Google. Now, Google share price went the other way, right? But shares have gone from here, from high to a low because they've taken a hit. They're cheaper. Why would you not? Why do people, when they invest in the stock market,
because I don't
want to
buy a 15 grand. I don't want to buy that 15 car, 15 grand. And by the time I get to the gate, it's worth five.
But the point is that you're not selling it. You're not going to the gate yet. You're buying it at 15 grand and you're sitting on it. And we know if you buy loads of them when they're down, 7 years or more, you've never lost money on them if they're spread out properly. So the cheaper, the better. The best thing that could happen to you, if you start your pension next month, right? The best thing that happened to you from a pension point of view, not from a world, is that the stock market just plummets for the next 27 years and 11 months. And then the day before you get to cash it all in, bang, up. And people look at it like, I know when I put a portfolio for, sorry for keep using the word portfolio, I actually hate using it, right? But when I put an investment together for a client, yeah, if I put an investment together for a client, I know there's a 25% chance that this time next year it's going to be down. So I'm saying to them, look, when we do our annual review, there's a 1 in 4 chance that we're going to be having a negative conversation.
But you don't need it for 30 odd years anyway.
And if you're willing to leave this thing alone for 7 years or more, we won't be having any negative conversations.
Yeah. I guess just coming from a nation that loves horse racing so much, a loss feels like a fucking loss, right? And you just feel like, this is not an investment. This is a bookies and I'm losing and I need to,
this
that's
is
how
why
it feels
we,
when you're not financially,
you know. But it's invest and forget. You set it up right at the start, you put it in and you leave it alone, forget about it.
Okay.
Hard thing to do to pay in when you know it's going backwards though and all of that.
Do you know,
hard to be going across.
Do you know the investment that has 100% chance based on history of 7 years or more being positive, right? So if you put it away today and you fecked off and came back 7 years later, there's a 100% chance if history repeats itself, you're going to have a positive return, right?
Was it pharmaceuticals?
If you, no, this is the one that spread. This is the no-brainer 60-40 portfolio. If you actually didn't go away and you looked at that every day, there's a 44% chance. Let's call it 50-50, right?
Yeah.
There's a 50-50 chance that if you compare it to yesterday, it's going to be down. Right? So it's exactly the same investment. There's nothing different about it. But if you look at it every day, and I promise you the pain of the loss is much more painful than the gain you get from the gain. And therefore, you'll pull the plug on it. So the thing about these things is invest and forget.
Invest and forget, yeah.
Okay. So for people, because there were so many questions about like that big buys, like about applying for mortgages, people who are just about to press the button on their mortgages prior to that, or even just going for a mortgage, we'll talk about your shit show, but going for a mortgage in general. Like, is now the time to be doing that? Is now the, or should you just, or is it really one of those things where it's very personal?
It is very, like, when it comes to buying a house, pensions, great. Put your money in now while things are going all over the place. And they're actually back to where they were in February anyway, so it doesn't really matter. The conversation's a bit mute. Buying a house, you see, this is where I'm delighted you're not on social media, because if you were, you wouldn't have invited me in today because you would have saw it on Instagram, right? But if you're buying a house, if it's a home, if everything is lined up, like you've had trouble trying to get a mortgage and buy a house, right?
Yeah.
If everything lines up perfectly, the builder or the person selling it to you is willing to sell it to you, you're ready to buy it. The bank has said, here's the money, right? You could say, oh, I'm a bit nervous and maybe prices might go up or go down in the next 12 months and I'll wait, right? And things may not line up again in 12 months' time. I promise you, if you're buying a home in 20 years, 25 years, 30 years from now, you're not going to be sitting in your kitchen going, I wish I had waited 6 months. It's a home. It's not an investment, right? Whereas if you're buying an investment property and you're thinking of flipping it or you're thinking of, that's a completely different ball game. And you know what? We're completely over exposed to property here. 85% of our wealth is tied up in land and property.
Yeah.
If you were one of these clever guys and girls who manage money, big billions of money, they'd have about 5 to 15%, depending on their opinion, exposed to land and property or property. Okay. We have 85% of our wealth tied up. That's a McWilliams quote, by the way. It's his figure. I'm not sure where he got it, but I believe him. David McWilliams, right? So, but 85% is a lot.
But is it that?
David McWilliams is brilliant. I love David McWilliams, but he scares the life out of
me. Yeah, he's terrifying, isn't he?
Because he's just, he's an incredible, very articulate man. And he paints incredible photographs when you're listening to him.
Yeah, he's brilliant.
And that's how I think, how you think in pictures, you know. So when you're listening to David McWilliams and he's saying to you, what we need to do is print more money. Yeah. And he's on this, I can see the printers happening and I can see the rushes and the whole lot. And I'm like, this is so, I'm so in over my head here. I can't being able to comprehend what this is. I feel so insignificant. It's like listening, it's like when you, what's that amazing book, him and Byron, like, oh shit, it doesn't matter.
I'm the wrong person.
I just feel so in over my head listening to him.
What I like about McWilliams is, whether you agree or disagree, he always has an opinion. He will give his opinion, and I remember I did a lunch with him. It was a corporate gig, and there was only 10 of us around the room around a lunch. This was a good few years ago, and it was in the Shelburne, actually, an afternoon sitting there, and it was in the middle of the global financial crisis, and the euro looked like it might collapse. And one of the things that was interesting about McWilliams was, not only did he have an opinion, but he had a solution that he believed could work.
That's what you want, though.
It's interesting because, and I know he's not a politician, so therefore he has the freedom to do that. But nobody else was kind of standing around going, this is what we could do.
Yeah.
But he had a solution. He says, yeah, this could work. Now, this is what I think they should do, and this could work, and this is why it could work, and this is what I think they'll probably do. And it was different. And that's what's great about the way, but he's also a storyteller.
He's a great storyteller. Yeah. Fantastic storyteller. And from the outside, from my point of view, an awful habit of getting us right. Mm. so I'm like, oh, wow. I really listen to the man. You know?
They love him abroad. Like I remember in the city of London and over meeting people who manage money, and these people manage billions. Do you know this McWilliams guy? Like, another way, we all know each other here. Right?
Yeah,
do you know
of course,
this?
Yeah.
But they bring him over and he does his corporate speaking gigs. They love him. They really get him.
The funny thing is, so back to mortgages and talking.
It's good we have her here, isn't it?
One of us has to keep the fucking show. I know, so I was about to say, we've got to get the fucking show on the road. He's been here for nearly an hour. But so people who like that, so we've always said about, like, we got our mortgage, we have our house, but I'm like, we're not selling it anytime soon. So it really doesn't really matter in the biggest scheme of things. So that if you're at that point that you want to buy a house, you want to get your home, you want to buy your home, there's nothing is any different to anything it has been before. Okay, grand. People trying to get mortgages like that are now coming off the pups, or, you know, that is it. So this is the thing I always find quite interesting, right? And this goes across the board for every single bank, that they make their ads look like it's an absolute fucking joy to go and get a mortgage. Like, I nearly lost hair. And ass. I nearly lost hair. It is the most soul destroying, terrifying. Like, I would like one of the banks to go, we're going to put you on a slate, slice you, take a bit of your fucking skin, make a jacket out of it, and then at the end of it, we might give you your mortgage. Do you know what I mean? Except they go, they've showed two people, a couple totally in love, not killing each other, painting a wall and picking a fucking thing. That doesn't happen. Do you know what I mean?
And you think it's bad going for the mortgage if ever you get in trouble with the mortgage. Now, in recent times, they changed the rules, and it was just a quick phone call, give me 3 months off, okay, and they gave you 3 months off your mortgage, and then another 3 months if you wanted it. And there was problems with that too, right? When you, in ordinary times, when you're applying and say, look, I'm in financial difficulty, they ask you to fill out this form. It's called a standard financial statement. And I'm not joking you. They want to know how much you're paying for your TV, your Sky or your whatever.
Should they have all that now from when you apply for your mortgage?
Yeah, but literally, I remember one time I was sitting with a client and a solicitor, and it was the client solicitor, and the three of us were sitting around the room. The solicitor rang the bank and they said, we're looking for a break. And the client was in a bad way, and that's why the three of us were working together to try and fix it. And we're looking to get this sorted out. And we've sent in the standard financial statement, and the guy on the end of the phone says, okay, I can see that you're paying, that the client is paying €120 for Sky, it was in this case, and it actually was Sky. Is the client aware there's a package for €40?
Oh my God.
And the solicitor turned around and says, can I ask, how much do you pay for your Sky? And people just feel, at a worst time in their life, they feel ripped apart by the banks.
Oh my God, it's difficult
going for a mortgage, but I actually, I'm not putting that down. The far side of youth problems, it just really feels heart-wrenching because you feel crap about the fact that we have kind of this innate responsibility that we want to pay back the money we owe.
Yeah, of course.
And therefore, then you go and you kind of, it's a little bit like, please, sir, can I have some more?
And you got some guy asking you if you really need your football package.
And I've nothing against like 22-year-olds, but it's typically really young people at the very start of the career that the banks push out to these people and say, this is your job, go and do it. It's horrible. Like, it's really horrible. Now, the banks made it easier in the last couple of months because what they did was bring us less than 5 minutes to get it through. But where the banks messed up was the banks got bailed out by us 12 years ago.
Yeah.
We all piled in and helped them out and kept them going, right? This was
still
the chance.
Hang-drawn and quartering us for fun.
The chance for the banks to say, you know what? We are actually for the society and we are part of society. What we're going to do, we're going to give you 3 months off and we're not going to charge you any interest. They charged everyone interest on the 3 months off. People are going back on their mortgage payments now, right? And their mortgage payment might have been €1,000 a month. Now they still owe the same amount of money. They owe the interest that they haven't paid and they've less time to pay the money back. So their mortgage prepayment's about to go up.
It's so intimidating and it's so scary. Like, I mean, people are so scared.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the banks had a chance to say, let's all be in this together.
We're definitely not all in this together.
That's bullshit that people keep playing out.
That statement is long gone. Long gone. Right.
So let's get a few questions,
yeah,
will
let's
we?
Do, let's do, so we'll do them as quick fire because, like, literally, we will be here all day. Should I overpay my mortgage?
No. Okay. No. Sorry, only if you're doing everything else right.
Fortex trading worth getting into?
Is it FX trading? Is that what they mean? That's probably a brand of one of them. Unless you've got a Harvard degree, no.
Okay. Most important question.
And even then you'll get it wrong.
This is very frequent. Most important question of all, do you think you can get PJ a mortgage?
I'd actually love to see what's going on with you, PJ. Can we talk about that for a second instead of your quickfire?
Let's do the quickfire and then you can talk about his mortgage, right? How should couples manage money when one spouse to give up work and stay at home?
It's actually funny. I was filming over the weekend for series 3 of How to Be Good with Money, which comes out in January. So it's out. It's always out in January. People are broke, right?
And
what a great time release.
So we were filming the weekend, and what was that question again? Because it reminded me of a house spouse. Oh yeah, sorry.
So if one wants to give up work to stay at home, and I love the way you know what I actually feel for you, because I've that thing of like giving up work to stay at home. It's probably not financially or economically viable for the other person to both of them should be working in childcare because it's a fucking
and it's funny
shit show.
Giving up childcare. Work to stay at home, we'd never say that. And if ever I say that, correct me, right?
Yeah.
It's working within the home.
Yeah.
That's what you call it. That's the PC way of doing it.
Hell owns what it is.
It's tough going. But what I would say is that it depends on the couple, right?
Yeah.
Some couples would absolutely kill each other if they didn't have joint accounts and all the money in together and hugging and everything, right? And then some couples would kill each other if they didn't have their accounts separate.
Okay.
And what they need to do is they need to have a really honest conversation around what is it that works here? What's the right thing to do? I would strongly suggest that the person who's working makes the recommendation that there's actually a physical payment each month to the person who's not working. That's their money for doing what they do in the home.
Oh.
Okay? Like, put it this way.
Take that sound bite.
Yeah. So, like, if they're like, you'd be pay, like, so if you were of a limited company account, you put them on.
If you were both working, you're probably paying someone else to look after the kids. So why can't you pay the person staying at home for looking after the kids?
Something into their account so they have some financial.
Recognise the effort as well.
Yeah. I mean, absolutely. And sorry, it's their money. And ideally, what you would do there is it's much cleaner. Then you say, there's the joint account. All the bills get paid out of that, and it doesn't work for everyone. So I'm not going to suggest that's the only way of doing it.
A really open conversation.
Yeah,
and then
absolutely.
Also putting out what your salary should be.
Yeah, like every couple of years, the life companies come out with these numbers, but it's like it's kind of 48 grand a year is what you would pay for the stay at home. Parent.
Yeah, but sure, like that's what some people are
like
going to be earning if one person's going to stay at home. Okay, so open, transparent conversation always helps. When you finish paying off a loan or credit card debts, how long does it take for a good credit rating?
5 years is typically, and what people will say, and it's interesting because I was going to say this earlier on when you were talking about your own mortgage.
Yeah.
ICB.ie or centralcreditregister.ie both of them, right?
Yeah.
The central credit register is kind of taken over. So do both of them. It's a report. You punch in your details and you'll get something in the post a couple of days later. And now you will know what the banks know about you.
Yeah. Yeah, I must go and get another one of them. Haven't had
it
done since.
Yeah, ICB.ie.
Do you not have one of those?
Central Credit Register.
No, that was a thing.
The credit rating thing.
I don't know.
So I had mine that were all like, and we couldn't figure it out. And then we were like, why is this coming along? And then eventually, the more we drilled down, we found out that they never did the paperwork on my loan. But the bank never. So when I went and sat in front of the bank manager, she was like, yeah, but it's underpaid. And I went, but you have not sent me one letter ever to say I wasn't meeting my loan. So something's gone wrong here. And she went, oh, you can apply for like that. We fake sold you insurance. We ended up having to go to the regional manager of the. It took so long. But this wagon sitting in front of me going, nothing you can do about it. You can never change your credit rating. Funny, this man made a call when we got it sorted out. And they literally 4 days later, I got a new credit rating completely.
Sorry.
Clear.
And actually, the financial ombudsman who looks into complaints by people against financial institutions in his most recent report, Jared Deering, I think his name, most recent report, said he said that banks are not quick enough to fix the mistakes that they put onto the credit rating.
And you know, the only reason I got that over the line was that I had emailed the bank manager and had said, as of this, and it was the only thing that saved me. He had retired. I actually was like, I know where he lives. I'll call to his house. Like, it was that bad. But it wasn't a threat. It was just a general. He made this agreement. I have found in my emails that I went to him, just FYI, just a note to let you know, I'm going to start paying that this, because I knew him quite, you know, so I was like, I'm going to start paying that as of this month. And he replied back, yeah, Grant.
All right.
That was the only thing that saved me.
Yeah, Grant.
Yeah, Grant. I'm off to my retirement. See you later.
how does a newborn affect a mortgage application? It does.
Yeah, it gets taken into account. And it's funny. Sometimes there's little things that go funny with this. I remember seeing a case years ago where the application was put up on the system, and when it was put on the system, they'd no kids on it, and it didn't get approved by the system. And then they put two kids in, and it got approved. Which is kind of.
I thought it was the other way around.
Yeah, no, that was a weird. No, that was a weird thing to happen. But the problem there is, and I don't actually sell mortgages, by the way, I don't do mortgages, but a really, really good mortgage broker is what you need. Like, you cannot get a mortgage in my. The reason why I don't do mortgages is.
Where'd you get a mortgage broker?
There's loads of them.
Oh, jeez, I'll give you five.
Well, no, a really good one, we said.
Oh, yeah, yeah. There's a lot of them out there. I can tell you. And they make great promises. But oh, yeah, they're great.
The reason why I don't do mortgages is because if you're not doing mortgages all day, every day, you don't know the intricacies of
and
that bank is doing that right
they,
yeah. now. And what that bank is doing today, tomorrow, they might be doing differently, right?
And the broker is free, right? I mean, if they get you the
Some brokers will charge you a fee. And some brokers will just live off the commission, and some brokers will charge you a fee and take the commission. And to be honest with you, I just cannot see how you can navigate this by yourself unless you're using somebody who does it all the time. And I know people are going to say, he's a broker of a sort. Of course he's going to say that. But genuinely, I have the knowledge and the understanding to do it myself, and I refuse to do it myself because I think I do a disjustice to my clients.
But ask around
like
as well.
To the gym. You would never go to the gym and just start moving shit around because you'll kill yourself. If you don't get financial guidance, you will destroy your life.
You ask around though, because we have an expert. We had a mortgage broker, and he, because of whatever was going on, the recommendation was it was a fucking crazy. It was one of these new companies that had come in that the rates were mad high. And actually, it was an estate agent who said, when we got it sorted out, it was a friend actually who drilled down and went, he works for a bank. He works in mortgages in a bank. He's not a broker. Yeah. He works with mortgages. And we got it through him. And actually, then he was like, go with AIB. They're the lowest at the moment. That wasn't his bank, but he was like, go with AIB, do whatever. So figure out as well, because the broker was trying to get us to sign up to one of these like Red Devil. Like, I know
the ones you're talking about. Subprime lender.
Yeah. Or something. Yeah, it was ridiculous. Okay, right. How do you manage savings and monthly bills when you're paid every 4 weeks?
Actually, interesting, when you're paid every 4 weeks, what I would do there is you get paid 13 times a year when you're paid every 4 weeks. Yeah. People think, and some people say, oh, 100 quid a week. Sure, that's 400 quid a month. It's not. It's 433 quid a month.
It's the simple shit you miss, right?
So, so you are actually, you can do two things. One thing that's probably a nice thing to do is because you're getting paid 13 times instead of 12 times a year, you can still work as if you're being paid by the month on a 4 week period.
Okay.
And then you have an extra payday every year.
Okay.
And that's a nice way of doing it.
I hope that made sense.
I pay myself wages on Revolut. That's what I do.
Is that what you do?
Yeah, I give myself my weekly allowance.
Why is PJ not getting a mortgage?
Let's start with Revolut.
No, I give myself my weekly wage.
So this one is kind of long. So let me start. Where is it? Sorry. So their other partner was stung by a bus developer in the crash, large loan, sole trader, finally settled it in full 3.5 years ago for amount less than what they owed. They had a van finance loans over the same period paid with no problem. Will this affect our mortgage application? If so, how long before it's off his record? His PAYE is permanent, so he's permanent, and then that person is in a permanent job as well, FTB, no kids and borrowing currently.
Okay, so the thing they do is, again, icb.ie, centralcreditregister.ie, find out what the bank says. The most important thing is, if you've had a problem in the past, when you submit the application to the mortgage company, tell them about the problem, right? Think about it. You're an underwriter. An underwriter is the person who decides that you're getting your mortgage or not, right? If you land on their desk and they're going, not really sure what's going on here, or there's a problem that they tried to hide from us, you often don't get a second run at it. Whereas if you go in first and say, look, there's the explanation. 3 years ago, I had a problem. The company went bust, really got messed over. This is why it's not going to happen again, because I've nothing to do with that developer anymore. I'm not involved in that, and I'm a PAYE worker now. Yeah. This is why it's very different. This is why you don't need to worry about a bank. You have a much, I'm not saying you're getting it, but you have a much better chance of getting your
and
mortgage.
Banks give you that airtime now, don't they?
Well, no, you put a letter with it. Like, at some stage, it has to be.
Let them see.
Someone has to open up your file, whether it's on a screen or whatever it is. But
make all the listeners
make sure you tell them what the problem was and why it's not going to happen again.
He's living in his mouse gaff and he only has a bowl and a plate.
That's all I need is a bowl and a plate. That's the last fucking problem I have. That's like far from it. I'm not buying into the need a bed conspiracy. It's fucking marketing ploy, by the way. Selling us a mattress and a bed. It's like, fuck. It's like
mattress, Mick.
I'm telling you, the whole bed conspiracy thing I'll never get over. I'm never going to get past it.
The company I work for offers us an option to buy shares. Pros and cons, especially around the tax side of things.
Buy the shares. When you're allowed to sell them all.
Okay, can we crowdfund PJ Gaff?
I don't. That's not my problem. I don't.
What's a good age salary?
The least worthy cause
exactly.
In the world.
Exactly. What's a good age salary to get a financial advisor? Any advice on when it would be a waste, or is it never a waste?
No, it's never a waste. People who have a financial planner have 2.5 times the net worth of people who don't when they retire. Now, that might be because they had net worth to start with, or maybe it was because they've got great advice. But the most important thing a financial planner does is it gets you to look at your stuff on a regular basis.
I'm not being smart. Is a financial planner, for me to say to you, I'd like to work with you and George, but is it expensive to have, I always go, why don't we have as part of our government, if we're paying tax and we're doing all of those things, because if you go into one of those, the Assistance Advice Bureau, where they just fucking look at you, do you know what I mean? You're thick. So,
I think I find them quite good just to back them up, but
actually,
go for it.
The two times I've gone in, the two women I've dealt with, and they were about maturity.
I think the phone line is brilliant.
Okay, maybe
the phone line
is absolute.
I've never walked in, so I don't know about walking in, but the phone line is superb.
So, but for to work with a financial planner, is it expensive? And I know that's a.
It depends, right? So we are expensive, okay. Right?
And I like your honesty.
We don't try and be anything. What we're trying to do is we're not trying to be the cheapest. We're trying to get our clients the best outcomes we can possibly get them, right? And we therefore
do you know
we put more
cheaper
time.
Than you?
Loads of people are cheaper than us, right? So, and look, I'll throw it out there. It's
what should you be paying, give or take?
So the thing that you should be paying, the thing you have to watch out for the most is paying nothing.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. If you're not paying for a product, you are the product. Okay. So you need to be really careful about that. Right. And you do need to check. Sometimes you'll see financial planners saying 500 quid. I know to bring a client through any type of a decent financial planning process, it's going to cost me around 1500 euros, maybe slightly less. Okay. Right. So if you're paying less than that, they have to sell you something. In order to make
so they're
to,
making a
to
gain
keep the
somewhere.
Lights on.
Yeah,
yeah.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah,
so they have a lot of packages they're trying to sell you from the day you walk in the door.
They're getting commission.
And the thing about it is transparency, the regulator puts more and more responsibility on the advisors and the planners to give you transparency. It's now a requirement that if they sell you a product, they have to verbally tell you, because it's interesting because you can bury it in paperwork, right? Mm-hmm. But they have to verbally tell you, I am getting paid X amount for this product. By the product provider. So the transparency is I have no problem. One of the problems we have, and sorry, I know you want to go back to your questions, right? One of the problems we do have is commissions are seen as this awful thing and commissions ripped my pension apart and did this. It's not commissions that are the problem, it's transparency, right? And commissions are a great way for paying for financial advice, provided you have the transparency. In the UK, they banned commissions a couple of years ago. And within 12 or 18 months, financial advisors had more than halved. there was less of them, and there was 5 million orphan clients. Now, an orphan client is somebody who needs advice but who doesn't have a financial advisor. Now, some of those 5 million probably were people who just didn't want to pay for advice, yeah. But some of them were people who actually needed. So if you're on a low wage, commission is a way of you paying for your advice over a long period of time built into the product. And that's okay. So commissions are not the problem, transparency is.
And a good place is to start is the book.
I'm not taking the piss.
I'm not even saying that as a thing. A good place to start, yeah. Actually, just from a basic level, is just to get. And that's not because you're in or whatever. We've talked about it before. It's a great little book to just start with and start going. Okay, well, because you can pick the chapters and go. Right, I'm going to talk about my credit card here, or we'll talk. You know, so that's even just on a baseline.
And it is. And what I'm trying to do with that book is private practice. We are at capacity. We're not taking on new clients at the moment, right? And what we're putting a delay on it for a couple of months. We're still talking to people, but if they decide to come on, we can't take them for a few months. So private practice, I can only get to so many people, right? That's what the media is about. That's what the book is about. That's what the TV is about. Genuinely, at 2 years of age, my father has a first heart attack. He had a quadruple bypass. At six, when I was six, he had 3 stents put in. When I was 8, he had a quintuple bypass. 5 of them, right? That was in 1982. He had his first bypass. St. James's Hospital say he is the longest open heart surgery survivor that they know in Ireland.
Wow.
Okay. He's 79 years of age now.
Alive.
Yeah, still alive. Wow. 79 years of age now. At 50 years of age, he gave up work because he had income protection.
Right,
somebody
okay.
had sold him a protection product that meant he was on 75% of his wage and he looked after himself.
Amazing, yeah.
And that's why I do what I do.
To accumulate.
Yes. Yeah. I do that because financial services have a massive impact on my life. My dad's still here.
Yeah,
there was a
yeah.
video I called.
Did you not get the points for heart? Your heart surgeon.
I didn't get the points though. I had to put a video up on YouTube called "Why Me Da Isn't Dead." Right, yeah. We got 60,000. This was years ago, actually, but it's still up on YouTube. 60,000 hits, but it's me and my dad sitting on a park bench in Nace talking about this story, and he believes it too. He wouldn't be alive now if he hadn't.
He had the stress of work and having to worry about those things. Yeah. Okay, perfect. Can he ask Owen what he thinks about Zurich Investment Fund as a way of saving on a monthly basis?
This is actually a really good point. I'm delighted this came up. Okay. I will never. In the public, promote a product, unless I'm getting paid for it, and I'll tell you I'm getting paid for it, but I will never go and say, Zurich, Irish Life, New Ireland, this is the best one to go with. I'll never do that on my Insta, on things like this, because different people need different advice, okay? But also because it was a couple of weeks ago, and please don't go Google Owen McGee and Bitcoin, right? Somebody used my name, my face, my story, said that I invested in 1.2 million in Bitcoin last year, and I made more off that than I did my salary last year. And it's
bullshit.
Great. And what's horrible about it is quite a few people people came to me and said, and they've done it. They've invested in Bitcoin as a result of it. So I don't endorse anything. If I'm endorsing stuff, I will tell you that I'm endorsing it, but I definitely won't go there with product. Okay.
Two questions. I love Owen. That's not a question. Tips for the big C. That's Christmas to help feeling overwhelmed by it. And the second question, pros and cons of a joint bank account in a relationship. We have a mortgage but split the bills 50-50.
So we've done the joint account already,
right?
Done
that already.
So the Christmas one is interesting. People say to you, oh yeah, I'm always doing all really well with my finances, and then like something hits me as a surprise, like Christmas. Does Christmas not happen every year? Like it happens every single year. So does back to school, right? So what you need to do is we have kind of, what do we have, 6 months to Christmas?
Just debate about the moment, although I've pissed a lot of money away this week.
We've 6 months left to Christmas, roughly, right? You need to say, and if you don't know, guess, right? How much does Christmas usually cost me extra? Okay. It costs me 600 quid. Put 100 quid aside if you can at all. If you can't afford Christmas. Right?
Yeah.
And this is the thing. Now, what you do then do is when you get to Christmas this year, you actually, from around the second week in November, when you start buying extra stuff for Christmas, start writing it down. Just simple in your phone, notes. Take out your notes and write down,
so
spent
two
X amount.
Tins of biscuits.
Yeah.
Or,
and what extra, this present for him, I spent on this, and spent 50 quid on my nephew for Christmas, all that type of stuff, BJ,
exactly,
you know?
It's going to be a ludicrous spend like that.
But you write them all down. So by the time Christmas is over, you know exactly how much Christmas is costing you. Okay. And then you divide that by 12 and you put it away for next year.
And a lot of people are saying, we were talking about this actually 2 weeks ago, is that because of the current situation that we're in, lots of people are starting to do that shop now, that they're starting to get the little bits and pieces in. Is that better to, you know, the people go, Jesus, you're sorted for Christmas early. But actually, the people who start in September, are they financially better?
It depends if you're disciplined or not, right?
And particularly you just start if you're doing loads of shit in December.
If you're doing it for the first time in particular, you start buying in September, and I'm sorted for Christmas, and you're still buying in October, and you're still buying in November, and then you say, actually, geez, I have a few extra quid there, I might buy something extra for Joey.
Isn't the takeaway of your personally attached?
So just be careful about that.
Okay.
It is about writing down, I'm not spending X more on this than Christmas, and keeping to your budget.
Because there's loads of them that are of this ilk, is about clearing credit cards. But there is I'm not trying to tell people, like, as in go and buy the book, but there is actually a really good chapter on clearing
getting
credit
cards,
getting rid of your debt.
Yeah. Crappy debt, as we call it.
Exactly. Just a top line on that, because I suppose that is kind of one of the biggest ones, that mortgages were.
Okay, so the big, when it comes to trying to tackle your debt, the big thing that you need to be aware of is the fact that doing anything is better than doing nothing.
Right.
Okay, it's a bit like pension. Doing anything is better than nothing. And what people don't realise is that a little bit extra, tenner extra a month off your credit card or 20 quid or whatever it is when you do those little things very often, they have big impact.
Right.
And people, like, automation of savings. We talked earlier on about auto-enrolment into pensions. We're lazy people, right? You have to make sure it's automatic. You don't want to make a decision to save, to put money into pension, or to tackle your debt every month when you get paid. You want to make the decision once and make it automatic. I'm going to put an extra 20 quid a month off my credit card, or you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to put 100 euros off the credit card. There's 1,200 euros on it. I'm going to clear it down over the next 12 months. Don't say every month I have to transfer 100 euros. Set up a standing order, direct debit, to transfer the 100 euros so the decision is taken off you. Okay. And then let it happen.
Always move your credit cards to those zeros.
Yes,
yeah.
You should do it once. If you have to do it once, it means you had a problem, right?
Right, okay.
You move it once, you clear it down, and then you get rid of the credit card altogether.
Do you like credit cards?
I hate them. I don't have one.
Really?
I
love it, but I have never missed a payment, and I've never not paid it completely in full at the end of it.
No, I'm a
But you only have a place in the bowl. Like,
that's true.
The reality is that you are still, I would still prefer to see you get rid of that credit card.
Really?
Absolutely. Because
Even though it's never cost me a penny and I get free AA.
It never costs you a penny, free AA.
Yeah.
But the reality is that the first time you hit real difficulty, the credit card will be the first place you go, and it's the most expensive form of debt. And because you've been so good, they'll throw money at you.
Oh.
So will he get money on a credit card, but he won't get money on a mortgage?
Yeah, much easier. Sorry, and that's a simple rule. The easier it is to get the loan, the more expensive the loan is going to be.
How do you mean?
So, like, a credit card's really easy to get money on, and the rates are kind of 20-22%. If you have 1,000 euros on a credit card for a year, it's going to cost you somewhere around 200 quid in interest. Now, put that in perspective. It's really hard to get a mortgage. If you have 1,000 euros...
2 months of my pension.
Yeah. If you have 1,000 euros on a mortgage, it's going to cost you 27 euros? Is it 2.70 euros or 20? Doesn't matter. It's going to cost
2.7% you... 2.7% or whatever. Yeah. Okay. Right. And before we go, obviously the reason that we were here was to get PJ a mortgage.
God, we're an hour and a half. I know.
Oh, jeez. I better top up my parking.
Oh, shit. Yeah.
But, like, in terms of mortgage, can anybody, do you think, figure out the plan? Like, as in, is that doable? PJ says no. You're doing your part.
I'm doing my part. Now, I heard the question. Can anybody get a mortgage? Most people can get a mortgage, right? But
it takes work to get there.
And what people don't realise is, why won't that let me? Sorry, I'm going to stop now for a second.
Because the last thing you want is a clamp. Because you think credit card is bad. missing the 2 euro on street payment and paying 180 quid to get the clamp off.
Yeah, right.
It's definitely worse.
So throw that question. I'm sure we're getting this edited. There's no way it's going to last an hour and a half. So throw that question at me again.
Can ultimately, if you go get some help, get a broker, figure it all out, drill down, ultimately, can you make yourself a candidate for a mortgage?
There are some people, a little bit like some people in a bar who are looking to pick up someone. They'll be really lucky and they'll be all right and they'll get someone very quickly. But they'll be really lucky and they'll match really quickly and they'll live their life very happily ever after. There are some people who have to work on it a little bit,
okay,
right? For most people, getting a mortgage starts 2 years before you apply.
Yeah. Fucking hell, like.
right?
Yeah. That's what our broker told us as well, Peter. Don't worry, we all felt sick. In fairness, it took 2.5 years in the end.
You're not a lost cause if you haven't started the work, right? But it's much better if you do. And things like you mentioned a second ago, PJ, that you transfer money to your Revolut once a month and that's your wages. That's really important stuff as someone who works for themselves. Okay, because what the bank want to see is the company is important. You have a limited company, I'm taking it, right? You have a limited company and then you're paying yourself a wage out of that limited company. The bank want to see is regardless of what's happening within the company, that PJ as an individual still gets paid every week or every month by the company.
Yeah.
And the same amount. It's all right to give yourself bonuses, but have a floor that you never go below.
Yeah.
Okay, that you're and you're doing that. By
I'm
the sounds
doing
of,
that, yeah. I'm doing
okay,
all
how
that,
long
yeah.
you been doing that?
Oh, say 13 years, say.
And has the wage been very, very consistent?
Very, very consistent.
Okay. And
it's changed by 500 euros in that time.
Well, do you know what? Tell you what, you guys keep talking because I can already see Owen starting to sweat. Owen, people can follow you on social media. Yes. I know you generally don't take DMs, but every so often you open up your DMs and say, ask me a question. But as in, I know you would, if it was open all the time, you would just be
What I do is when people ask me questions by DM, I just can't. I do Q&As from time to time. And when I do the Q&As, I will answer questions that everybody, and sometimes people get very personal those questions.
Of course.
Generally, what I'm trying to do is I can't get to them all. So what I try and do is I answer the ones that I think are people everybody's going to get something from. And they work. Those actual Instagram, it's a very friendly place to be, PJ. I know you're not on social media. But
it can be.
It's a very friendly place to be.
No, I haven't.
Twitter isn't.
No, I was not. I quit them all when COVID came. I might reignite them again because they're still there.
Well, people can follow you on social media. Yeah. The book, How to Be Good with Money, is you buy it online. It's across every bookshop. Yeah. And then you're back with
it's
a new series.
It's the number one personal finance book of 2020 in Ireland.
And rightly so.
And your series is on the RT player. So yes. I definitely
and it's
think
always on the
RT
player because it's there for schools. It'll always be on the RT player. Both Brilliant. Series 1 and series 2 it's, are
And you're
there.
Finished
so
filming the new series?
No, when you're just starting.
But you have everybody you need for that.
We actually need one more person.
One more person.
When is this going out?
It's like literally tomorrow.
Okay, we absolutely need. So if people are interested in going on the show, it is the best opportunity you are ever going to get, right? You ring 01-708-8191 or money@indiepix.ie, IndiePix.ie. When you send an email to that, you just get a form sent back to you. You don't need to go into it. You get a form sent back to you on that email and you fill out the form, you send it in, or ring Helen on 01-708-8191 and talk you through it. And honestly, guys, everything gets thrown at these people to make sure that things work. And it's not just people who are struggling. Like, we have people who are on good salaries.
We have people with actual savings and money and all.
Yeah,
imagine. Help them with that.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be on that episode, but you know. Right, Owen McGee.
Thank you very much.
Thank you
for so long. But
no, really enjoyed that. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Oh.
This podcast is part of the Headstuff Podcast Network.
If you want to support this podcast and get a full ad-free episode, sign up to Headstuff Plus.